Sasha Marsden was an outgoing, funny and sociable young lady who loved to make people laugh. She had a really caring, supportive family, really close network of friends and a boyfriend who adored her. Now, despite the fact that she'd had some challenges in her life, by the age of 16, she was excelling in a childcare course, she'd started college, she had a truly bright future ahead of her. And like so many young people, she wanted to make a little bit of extra cash, so she began job hunting, and she thought she'd had a stroke of luck when David Minto reached out to her to offer her a cleaning job in a local hotel. Little did Sasha know, David's intentions were evil and sinister. This is the tragic and brutal murder of Sasha Marsden. I'm Emma Kenny, welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Jane and Gary Marsden had five children, three girls and two boys, Gemma, Mark, Katie, Thomas and Sasha. They were a busy family, essentially, a busy household. Sasha, who's the victim in today's case, was the youngest of the siblings. She was born on May the 7th, 1996. And how was she described? Well, her mother, she described Sasha as a really cheeky girl, but she said she was never a shy girl, but somebody who was also really lovely. So even though she was cheeky, we're not talking about somebody who was nasty, quite the contrary, a charming, cheeky girl. Her sister, Katie, she described her as having a heart of gold, which I think is something that denotes a particular type of human being, isn't it? When somebody says they have a heart of gold, just something truly special about them. She also said that she could be a real wind-up merchant, but that you could never get mad at her for very long. Gemma described her as a cheeky, friendly and stubborn girl. She also said she was really special, said that she was a wonderful and caring auntie. And her brother Thomas, he said that she was never afraid to put her opinion across and that she had this real knack of being able to just make you smile. And again, that speaks to her character, both charming and humorous. Mark, well, he said that he was just so proud of his little sister. Said she was really social. She liked going out with her friends. And the friends that she had all noted that she was this really great, supportive friend who was always there to listen, always there to make them feel special, could make the worst day better, could make you feel that instant sense of cheer when you were around her. She was constantly making them laugh. They also described her as dependable and loyal, said she was full of personality. And one of the things that they all noted was that she absolutely loved to dance and she'd do it anywhere. So they could just be walking down the street, she'd hear music, and that would be enough to get her busting a groove, so to speak. They say that she was just a whole heap of fun to be around. And I think what I've just described there is something we consider was a life force. Some people are. They just have that psychology, that emotional repertoire, so to speak, to just be larger than life. And I feel that Sasha genuinely was. Now in 2004, the family moved to Steyning. They moved from Bolton, which is just a few miles down the road where I live. And this was quite a big move because it was a village just on the outskirts of Blackpool. And it's quite a quiet place. So there's not a great deal going on in that particular village. It's obviously a place that you'd move because you want to have a quieter life. But when you're a kid, the chances are that it's not going to be something that enamours you as much as the bright lights of Blackpool, which was very close. So Sasha used to go to Blackpool with her friends because it was a great deal more fun as far as they were concerned, particularly as teenagers. Now in July 2010, Sasha had a really awful thing happen to her. She goes to the park with a friend. This is just after school. At 8:30 p.m. that evening, Sasha's family got the most horrendous phone call. The police called and said that the reason they were getting in touch with the family was because Sasha had been really violently assaulted. She'd been taken to the police station at that point, and it turns out she'd been attacked and raped by a 22-year-old man. Bear in mind, she was a really young person. She was 14 years of age at this point. The man had apparently got chatting to the girls. You can imagine the type of character. He's going to try to get himself involved with the girls to get their trust, and then that will lead on to whatever it is he had, dark intention-wise. So he starts chatting with them. He offers them vodka. Sasha is obviously very young. She's not experienced drinking before. So when he's plying her with this alcohol, she'd actually become unconscious, which just demonstrates the level of manipulation of this man. When you are somebody who, first of all, decides that it's okay to go and spend time with two young girls drinking when you're an adult, that in itself shows you the fact that this individual was really Machiavellian in the way that he was approaching this. But then to actually play with enough alcohol to make her unconscious, she would have been completely unable to fight back. She would have been completely unaware of actually what was really going on around her because she would have been so intoxicated. And he would have been able to do exactly what he wanted and was willing to do exactly what he wanted. And bear in mind, this is in public. It's truly chilling to imagine this individual would feel comfortable in public, in fact, in front of her friend, to assault her this way. And her friend, who's also in a situation where she's in unfamiliar territory, this man is obviously more physically dominating, and she's having to watch as he does what he does to Sasha, and she feels completely helpless to help because she's too small to do anything that's going to change the situation. So Sasha, who's this young teenager, has been set on by this man in the park. Now, fortunately, two women were actually walking by the park and they noted what was going on. And they were incredibly brave because, first of all, they intervened and then they called the police. So not only are they able to stop the assault continuing any further, they actually do manage to get him apprehended by the police. What is striking for me is that when you think about the brutality of the attack I've just talked about and the public arena that it took place in, this kind of an individual is incredibly dangerous. I mean, any kind of criminal who will act in that fashion, are they going to be safe ever walking our streets? But he's only given 5 years and 4 months in prison. I feel like that's an incredibly lenient sentence. And also, when you think about the psychology of a victim, what is it saying to that victim if somebody gets such a lenient sentence? Is it something that arguably minimises the reality of what's played out and makes that victim feel that it wasn't that important what happened to them, as opposed to recognising that they're the victim and that this person absolutely is a perpetrator and, in my opinion, deserves a very lengthy sentence? It can make the victim feel like, at the end of the day, what happened to them wasn't too bad, which goes completely against the way it feels inside for that victim. And it severely affected Sasha. Her mum said that from that moment onwards, she wasn't happy, she wasn't trusting, she became really angry, and all of that makes perfect sense because, first of all, the world around you just slips away. Everything that you thought you knew, it dissipates. All of a sudden, you're in a scenario where everything that was familiar feels unfamiliar. Everything that felt safe feels unsafe. And to manage that as a child, as a 14-year-old girl, when it's already such a challenging time, everybody who's been 14 can recall you're dealing with new relationships, you're dealing with issues at school, you're dealing with the pressures of exams, you're dealing with growing into the young adult you're becoming. You haven't got the skills that are required to navigate any of that at this point. But you're having to face it. Add to that this kind of trauma, of course, you're going to be angry because the world that you thought you could trust has just absolutely dissolved before your eyes. And you're now dealing with being somebody who has been horribly violated. You're now a victim. And I appreciate that, of course, victims become survivors. But for that initial period, you absolutely feel that victim experience because everything around you is so disastrously different to how it used to be. And it's really sad for Sasha because she's managing all of those things I've just said. And then school becomes a real problem for her because she starts getting bullied. And you can imagine, can't you, how certain individuals who are at school use the kind of leverage of somebody's horrible experience against them. And you can just imagine, can't you, the kind of bullying that would take place. Like people suggesting that she invited the rape and all of those things that nasty kids will go ahead and throw at victims. And the problem with that is for Sasha, that will almost be the worst nightmare for her the idea that people can believe that she is responsible when in fact she has been so horribly raped and abused by this man who clearly has been sent to prison because he was guilty. But when you're facing that on a daily basis, it's just overwhelming. So she starts skiving school, her behavior changed. Apparently she began drinking, she began having relationships with boys that she would never have had before this situation. And that self-sabotage we see often in young people who endure these kind of violations. It's almost like a cycle where they fulfill a prophecy because people are being so nasty about what's happened to them that in the end they think to themselves, well, I may as well act this way because at least I'm in control. And also because of the self-hatred that people feel and the self-loathing, victims will often invite this kind of behavior to prove that they deserve what happened. And it's just dreadfully upsetting to witness somebody who's been through this horror actually start to use it against themselves, because arguably it does the very opposite of what they need to start that healing. Now in 2012, things change for Sasha. She starts a relationship with a guy called Danny. He's a couple of years older than her, and some things are changing in her world. You know, she's a little bit older now. She's starting to feel that she wants to be a little bit more independent. She's still dealing with the healing, obviously, of what's occurred. And on the 31st of August, she gets dropped off for a date with Danny in Blackpool. Apparently, they were going to meet her parents afterwards. But later that evening, the parents have heard nothing from Sasha. Also, her phone's switched off, which as a parent is a monumentally inappropriate thing to do, because literally you want to know where your child is. And if they switch the phone off, you have decided a whole heap of things that could have gone wrong or happened to them. So when she fails to return home, they inform the police that she's missing. She has been missing before, so it's not completely atypical behavior, but it's obviously very disturbing for the family. But 2 days after, Sasha's mum gets a phone call. So Jane receives a call from Sasha and she's basically calling to say, I'm okay. She said that she'd run away from home with a boyfriend and that she was in Lowestoft, which is all the way the other side of the country. So they'd obviously got a train and decided potentially that they were going to start a new life together. But Jane, being the loving, caring parent, persuades Sasha to return home. And it makes perfect sense, because it doesn't really matter that you and your boyfriend think you can potentially make a go of it in another part of the country. The truth is, it's very difficult to be independent at the age that we're talking about. She's only a young girl. They haven't got financial and economic stability. Understandably, a home is certainly the best place for them. And fortunately, Sasha agrees. And one of the things that she says is, if I do come home, I want Danny to move in with us. And with respect to her parents, they let that happen. So her dad basically picks them up a week after they've run away. So they are now in a scenario where she has got this, shall we say, relationship with a boy that's working out well enough for her to want to be around him 24/7. And I think it's really telling of her parents, who put her needs potentially above their own by accepting that he is entitled to stay at the home with them, and that they are supportive of the relationship that Sasha has with him. We get to September 2012, and this is when I'd say life really starts to turn around for Sasha after all of the horror that she's been through. Her life is starting to really pick up. She enrolls at Fylde College on a childcare course, and she really enjoyed it. And it's at this point that she decided that she really wanted to work with children. So everything is moving in the right direction. Her life's improving. She no longer, I would say, wants that horrific event of the assault to define her life. She wants to define her life herself. She wants to be in the driving seat. And the psychological feeling of having what we call agency, which is where you realize that you happen to the world doesn't happen to you, is such an empowering position to realize. And it feels like that's exactly what's occurring for Sasha. She's put all this really hard work into turning her life around, and she's got things in place, a relationship, supportive, loving family, and a career that she is going to work towards achieving. And it's at this point she feels, well, it would be really good to be able to make a little bit of extra money. She wants a part-time job. So she starts to job hunt. And what does that tell us about Sasha? it tells us that responsibility is growing more and more. You know, not only is she at college, not only is she in a relationship, not only is she working things out with her family, she's also in a situation where she's thinking about some responsibility and accountability to herself by earning extra cash doing a job. January 28th, 2013, she ends up getting this interview. It's at a hotel in Blackpool, and they'd advertised for a part-time cleaner. Her parents, obviously, because of what's happened to her in the past, they're going to be really nervous. And they were. They were concerned about what this might be and how she might cope. But they found out that the hotel belonged to a friend of a friend. So Sasha's dad ends up dropping Sasha off at the main road on the south shore of Blackpool. Then half an hour later, he goes and picks her up. She talks about the fact that the interview was a success. She was excited and she'd had a trial while she was there and it had gone really well, which would mean that she would earn a little bit of extra money. Now, it's 3 days after this, which is January the 31st, that Sasha just goes to college as normal. And this particular day, this is really heartbreaking because this just demonstrates how well Sasha was doing in her life. So her tutor took her aside and said that she was doing really, really well on her course and that because she was so impressed with her, she could now move on to the next level. So that's a really positive moment for her. Everything is coming together. Sasha's dad then went and picked her up from college and took her to work because this is when she's meant to have her first proper shift. He dropped her off, basically in the same place that he had for her trial shift. But as it's getting later on, the family start to get a little bit concerned because they can't get through to Sasha. And then by 8 p.m, Sasha's still made no contact. Now, this is worrying because she was planning to go to a party at 8:30 p.m. that evening with a boyfriend and she wouldn't miss those arrangements that she made with Danny, who was a massive priority in her life. But I guess that whilst you're managing that situation in your head and you're managing the anxiety and concern for your child, you're also thinking, well, they've gone to work. Maybe they're working later, maybe they're earning a little bit more money, and you're going to be trying to make that feeling of fear dissipate, thinking to yourself, well, it could just be one of those situations where she stayed to work and maybe earned some extra cash. But again, the fact that the phone's turned off when they tried to call her is really worrying because that's not in keeping with how teenagers tend to act. So Sasha's family at this point and her boyfriend, they begin to search for her. But the problem is that even though dad's dropped her off near the hotel, they don't actually know which hotel she worked at. He'd only ever dropped her off nearby. Danny fortunately knew Sasha's Facebook password and he also knew the name of the person who employed her was David. So they go on her Facebook, they look on the friends list and they find him. Therefore, now they can find the details of the hotel. At this point, her parents drive to the hotel. And this is just, again, indicative of Sasha's family because they genuinely have her at their heart. The very fact that mum and dad are straight away going off to try to locate her, they're driving to the hotel, they want to find out what on earth has happened. It's testament to the relationship they clearly had with her. They drive to the Grafton House Hotel because this is what they've located through Facebook. And at this point, they speak to David and he said, well, she left ages ago. She went to meet her dad, which is obviously what they would have believed in that moment because that's exactly what Sasha should have been doing. So now the family are incredibly worried. Bear in mind, she has had a history of running away before, but they can't really recognise that this is something that she'd do in this moment because her life is going in the right direction. Everything is working out. And they would never have expected her to stand up Danny because that's her boyfriend who she's in love with. They carry on searching, but they can't find her anywhere. So at 11 p.m. that evening, they actually go ahead and report her missing to the police. Two police officers come to the Marsden family home. Apparently, they spoke with the family for about 20 minutes because obviously they're getting details and information about Sasha. But during this period of time, one of the officers gets a call and it's just horrifying because you can imagine, can't you? You're worried about your child running away, or you're worried about something having happened to your child, but in the back of your mind, you're just thinking, I'm probably overreacting. Everything's going to be all right. Sasha's going to walk through the door at some point. She's probably hanging out with friends. She'll get into trouble when she gets home, but everything's going to be okay. And then the police officer who got that call comes in and says, a body's been found. And not just that a body has been found, that the police suspect that that body is Sasha's. You can't even begin to compute how that would feel in that moment, because the family just thought they were dealing with her disappearing and she's come back before. And now there's a strong possibility and a strong suspicion by the police that Sasha's never coming home. Turns out about 9 p.m. that same evening, there was a fire. It was a fire in this L-shaped alleyway, and it was just between some houses, which is very near the hotel, by the way. This obviously concerned the neighbours because they saw smoke billowing from this particular area, and some had gone out to investigate because they wanted to know where the fire was coming from. Was it a house, etc.? And one of the neighbours who saw this burning pile, they went and got a bucket of water to put the fire out. Once they'd thrown the bucket of water over the flames and those flames had subsided and the smoke had started to clear, the neighbours looked, and what they thought they were looking at was a mannequin. So they think that somebody has set fire to a shop's mannequin. But then they realise it isn't a mannequin. It's actually the body of a woman. They noted that she'd been wrapped in a blanket, in bin liners, and also in carpet underlay. And obviously the carpet, etc., and the underlay, it would be flammable, so it had been burning quite heavily. The police then get called, and when they attend the scene, they realise straight away they're dealing with a homicide, and they realise really quickly that they're not going to be able to identify the victim easily, because the injuries are so severe, they're so catastrophic. So the consequence of that is they need to take DNA, because that's the only way that they're going to be able to identify the victim. And it's terrible to think about the impact that that has on a family when the injuries are so severe to the body that you don't even get to say goodbye. So the person who's murdered this individual hasn't just stolen their life, they've stolen the opportunity for the family to say goodbye. So sadly, because they can't identify the body, the police have to take DNA from a toothbrush of Sasha's so that they can confirm it's her, even though they've actually found her bloody clothes, her purse, and a mobile phone of hers in the bin. The truth is that they still need to have that DNA confirming that it is her. Also, they note that the phone itself had been taken apart, so it's been destroyed. The police immediately suspect that there is a link between Sasha's death and the hotel, because this is the commonality. She's been to work at this place and now her body has turned up dead in an alleyway on fire. So when they investigate, they find out that the hotel was owned by David Minto's girlfriend. And this, of course, is the same David who's employed Sasha and also had spoken to Sasha's family earlier on, saying that she'd left the hotel of her own volition and free will to go back to meet her father. So now the police are homing in. They feel like this is a very odd story. So Minto was 22 years old and he worked at the hotel as a handyman. People who knew Minto said that he was one of those individuals that was kind of fringe. He was a loner. He didn't have a lot of friends. He also spent a very great amount of time online. He'd be on social media, play video games. Apparently he loved violent films such as Resident Evil. I'm not saying for 1 minute that there is a link where people who watch violent films are violent themselves. Of course I'm not. I'm just saying that if you are somebody predisposed to those kind of inclinations, then of course you're going to be more attracted to these kind of films than this kind of content. Also, he had a really weird nickname on Facebook. He was called David Demon Minto. Again, I appreciate lots of young people have stupid nicknames, but when it's in the context of what we're talking about today, I kind of think he probably named himself that for very good reason. Now, he had been alone at the hotel when Sasha had arrived to work that day, and his girlfriend, she didn't get home till around 9 p.m. But when she walked in, she said what struck her was that it smelled of cleaning chemicals. Now, he said, the reason that I've cleaned is because I had a nosebleed. That in itself is ridiculous. We've all had nosebleeds, but a nosebleed does not require cleaning chemicals to get rid of it, does it? Because there isn't a very large amount, and even if you have a really severe one, I'm aware that some people will be right now shouting at the video saying, Emma, I have had really serious nosebleeds. But for the most part, you're not going to need cleaning chemicals, because once it starts, you pop your head back, you get tissue, you shove it in front of yourself, and it sorts itself out as it clots, right? That's what happens. So it doesn't sit well with this particular girl because she knows that firstly, it's totally out of character. Shall we say, Minto isn't known for his cleaning habits. And also, it just seems a little bit over the top. And the fact that he feels the need to explain it in that way, again, all of this makes his behaviour seem off. And it's clear at this point, when the police start to investigate, that Minto's girlfriend didn't even know that Sasha had been hired as a cleaner. Now, bear in mind, it's her hotel. So if anybody is going to be doing the employing and the hiring, it's going to be her. And also, Minto had hired Sasha to work on a Monday and a Thursday, and that's when his girlfriend works another job. But on top of this, they didn't even need a cleaner at the hotel because the hotel was closed at the time. So none of this makes sense at all. Minto has apparently hired Sasha for a job that doesn't exist on dates and times that the girlfriend, who actually is responsible for the hotel, won't be present. So the police are now deeply suspicious of Minto's motivations. It gets to February the 3rd, 2013, and at this point, the DNA confirms that the body in the alleyway is confirmed to have been Sasha Marsden. Her family were obviously aware that it was very likely, but until you get that confirmation, it's almost impossible to allow your brain to digest it. And I actually watched some footage of her mother talking about the fact that she just still to this day will look and notice girls and think, maybe that's Sasha. And I genuinely think that when you lose somebody in such an incomprehensible manner, your brain does that because it's desperate to make the reality that's occurred change into a new reality where it was all wrong and people were mistaken and where your child is still alive. But those results clearly define that Sasha won't be coming home. Now, when they do the autopsy, it is absolutely horrific. The brutality and violence that poor girl endured when she was murdered. She was stabbed 56 times, but in the head and neck. Even imagining stabbing somebody once in the face is horrific, but to actually stab somebody 56 times in the head and neck, there's got to be a pleasure involved in doing that. And poor Sasha had 9 defensive injuries to her hands and arms as well. So that girl, she was a warrior. She was totally overpowered by this absolute monster. And yet there she was trying to fight back. And to put this in context, the bone of her skull was actually scored. And that means that the level of force that was used was extreme. And to make matters even worse, her body had actually been sexually abused, and they believe that was either when she was dying or after she died. And she had been assaulted both vaginally and anally. So you can just see that this person had a sexual motive. And also, it kind of fits within the disorganized killer framework, because you think about the facial destruction, the dehumanization, and then the violation potentially after death. This is very fitting with somebody who would be considered a disorganized offender, but also somebody who could potentially be a disorganized serial killer in the making, because this kind of violation, this kind of aggression, we see it in context with disorganized serial killers. Now, when they searched the hotel and they looked forensically at it, they found that Sasha's blood was all over. Also, David's clothes themselves had Sasha's blood on there. Also, they found jewellery in the hotel belonging to her. This included earrings and a necklace. And he'd actually tried to flush the earrings and the necklace down the toilet. The bath also had blood traces because it turns out that he'd washed her body. I imagine that in his mind, he was being forensically aware. And he was thinking that by washing her body, he would be washing off traces of himself. But obviously what he's actually doing is washing traces into the actual bath itself, because there's no way that he understands how minute the detail is when the forensics are involved. And they will find a pinprick of blood within an environment, no matter how hard they have to look. Also, they find a knife, and they believe that that knife was the murder weapon. So at this point, he's absolutely banged to rights, so Minto's charged with Sasha's murder. And as I've already said, Sasha's family were unable to actually identify her body. They were unable to say goodbye to her. And that just additionalizes the heartbreak. And this is already an unimaginably tragic situation. But it's made worse when you literally cannot hold your child again for the very last time. It's been taken from you. When talking about this horrific crime, Detective Superintendent Andy Murphy, he described David as a really calculated killer. Now, personally, I think he's a very disorganized killer, but I would absolutely agree that he is calculated. And if you think about why Detective Superintendent Andy Murphy believes that, it's because of the premeditation level. At the end of the day, he knew exactly what he was doing. He lures Sasha to the hotel by promising her work. That means immediately she's going to trust him, because if you're somebody who has got a position of responsibility, and in her mind, he has a position of responsibility. He is somebody who's been able to offer a position in cleaning and also has a hotel, as far as she's concerned, from which to do that. So she is going to happily go there believing nothing bad can happen to me because of all those biases of security that she's going to create in her mind that you have to on a daily basis. Because of course, if somebody offers you a job in a location, you're going to go and think that that's a safe place to go to. So he has absolutely constructed this to bring her to a place where he can then harm her. And she was thinking that she got a life together, she was going to be able to pay for herself and look after herself while she's going through college. And instead, she ends up in the hands of that killer. It's truly devastating to imagine that there she was going to that place, starting this new job full of hope. And actually, it's just been a lure to bring her to her death, essentially. The trial begins on July the 15th, 2013, and for the family it's horrendous because he pleads not guilty. And because Minto pleads not guilty, it means that every single detail is something that the family are going to have to listen to. It's hard to imagine sitting there and having the defence and prosecution go through all the information that led to a loved one's demise, but that's what he does. He makes them endure that. And of course, he's the victim somehow in this. So his ludicrous version of events was that Sasha had actually thrown herself at him. He was so attractive, so irresistible, that Sasha couldn't help herself. And this, of course, is to explain the sexual contact between them. But he's making out that it was totally consensual. But then after she left, he apparently kept on cleaning, even though this is completely out of context. His girlfriend said that he wasn't somebody who cleaned. But today, not only is he the most attractive man in the world, where young, gorgeous teenagers just throw themselves at him. Also, he's decided that suddenly he's into cleaning. But then, after Sasha's apparently left, he hears this noise. He rushes downstairs because of this noise. And he finds Sasha's body. And also, let's just go into the world of the mind of Minto and just imagine that he did find Sasha's body dead. Horrifically brutalized as well. You would be ringing the police, barricading yourself in a room, saying, please God, come and help me because there is a murderer around and they have just brutalized this poor girl and I am in fear of my own life. But no, like I said, goes ahead and does things like bathes her, carries on cleaning, completely the opposite of what anybody would do. And if we were to go down that line and say, well, maybe that could have happened, which it clearly didn't, wouldn't explain the fact that he was looking for a cleaner without telling his girlfriend on the days where his girlfriend wasn't around. Or the fact that David had literally gone out of his way and contacted Sasha on Facebook, lured her to the hotel with the promise of a fictitious job, and also told her apparently to come to the hotel alone because he said apparently he was nervous around new people. So the jigsaw pieces don't fit together to prove any innocence whatsoever. They fit together to prove that he is guilty as hell. And what the prosecution believed, and they'll be absolutely right, is that David basically tried to have sex with Sasha, and then she rebuffed that, she said no, and he became really angry with her when she refused. And this is when he decided that he was gonna stab her, and she was obviously trying to get away at that moment in time. Arguably, I would say as well that there is a part within him that wants to murder somebody. I don't believe that it's enough to say, well, he was just really devastated by the fact that this girl said no to his sexual advances. I think that he has a subtext in his mind. This has been constructed to get her there on that day. He knows that he's not going to get disturbed for a period of time because his girlfriend isn't going to be home. He appreciates that he's going to be more physically overpowering. And the very fact that he's gone from sexual advances to murder suggests to me it was always on his mind. There was always the potential that he was going to kill Sasha. I'm not saying he'd absolutely firmly decided on it in the moment that she arrived that day. I'm saying that I think his fantasies had played out again and again and again in such a fashion. And the minute that he had an excuse in his mind to become angry with her, to become rageful towards her, that's when he allows that fantasy to completely flourish. And that's why the brutality is so enormous, because it is overkill. I genuinely think he has to have fixated on that idea and that picture of just destroying somebody many, many times before actually doing it. And also, it's really unusual, in my opinion, for somebody to be so brutal to a stranger, basically, because Sasha was basically a stranger, in that fashion on that occasion for the first time as far as killing goes. It makes you think, has he done it before? But certainly, he's going to have engaged time and time again in that fantasy. The wounds that Minto actually inflicted on Sasha, because they were so graphic, they couldn't show the photos in court. And that, again, demonstrates just how devastating the injuries were. But they did describe them in detail, and they had a body map which showed the illustrations of the locations of the injuries. So her family are sitting there having to witness the reality of what played out for their gorgeous family member. It must be absolutely soul-destroying. And this will also demonstrate to the jury just how horrific the injuries were, because obviously, usually you are shown these kind of photographs. The prosecution bring in a witness as well called Kimberly Fazakerly. She's a 22-year-old, and she'd actually been asked to come to the hotel by Minto on a Thursday. So he was putting feelers out for victims. And bear in mind, that's when his girlfriend's at work. Now, she'd turned up, because obviously she wanted a job. He'd shown her around, then he'd taken her into his bedroom. And she said that she immediately had that instinct. She said, I felt scared. I could feel that something was going to happen. And she was right, because at this point he touched her inappropriately. Now, she pushed him away, but he was really persistent, didn't get off straight away. But then finally she did manage to get away from the hotel, and she didn't ever speak to Minto again, but she felt really frightened. And that had happened only 3 weeks prior to Sasha's murder. And I would imagine that the reflective experience for her of thinking, oh my God, that could have been me. And when somebody tries something like this out, so let's say that Minto is trying in that moment to affect a fantasy that he's built up in his mind, the fact that she refuses and leaves, that may have triggered that desire to prevent anybody else ever doing that again. So the main weapon is that he will not be refused by anybody else. Now, what we have with Sasha is her story has been that she's had a horrific, violent sexual assault 2 years earlier. So she's going to be really resistant in that moment. She isn't going to be in a scenario where she accepts those advances. She's just not going to have it, because she needs to protect herself. She's been getting over that horrific violation. And that likely means that even if he had a kitchen knife threatening her, she's still going to fight back. And it's horrible to imagine that those final moments would be spent for her in blindsiding disbelief and horror that this is happening again, but happening in a far more sinister and far more brutal fashion than had happened before. It's just devastating to know that this poor girl suffered yet again at the hands of a violent perpetrator, but this time she didn't escape. This time she didn't survive. It's also worth noting that Minto wasn't actually suffering from any mental health conditions. He had in 1996 been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but that's not going to contribute towards you killing. And in 2005, they actually noted that he didn't have any symptoms as far as they were concerned of ADHD. It was also noted that he had actually received some psychiatric care as a child, but he'd been discharged from that care in 2006. So no notable mental health issues at the time of the murder. Understandably, when the jury came back with a verdict on this case, they unanimously found him guilty. And on July the 26th, 2013, sentencing occurred. Judge Anthony Russell said the attack had been ferocious and sustained. And he commented that there was overwhelming evidence against Minto. He said that Sarah had the prospect of a happy and successful life ahead of her. And he said this, "You have not only destroyed the life of one human being in a most brutal way, but you have cruelly devastated her loving parents, family and friends. There is not a thread of common humanity in you." Aminto was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 35 years. That means that he'll be eligible for parole in 2048. So at this point, he would be 57 years of age, which to me feels like it's unfair because being up for parole when you've still got another 40 years of life potentially, when you've stolen a young girl's future so brutally, I don't know. It feels relatively lenient as far as I'm concerned. When the judge came up with that sentence, he said there was quite a few aggravating factors. So first of all, Sasha's age, that made her a very vulnerable victim. Also, there was a premeditation of the rape. The fact that her injuries were so extreme that she must have suffered deeply before she died. Also, the fact that she thought that she was going for a job meant there was an abuse of trust. He attempted to destroy her body after he killed her. All of these are highly aggravating factors. And there aren't mitigating factors because there was literally nothing that essentially could have contributed towards him acting this way in his defence. Also, the very fact that he manipulated and lied to the authorities by saying that he hadn't actually killed her, that again is an aggravating factor. He didn't take responsibility, he didn't take accountability. Now, in a statement, Sasha's family, who have obviously had to endure the most tragic of losses, but also had to face this monster in court, the trauma level that they will have experienced will just be off the chart. They said, "Each wound David had inflicted upon her has stabbed at the heart of each and every one of her family. And the way that she was killed will haunt us for the rest of our lives." And very, very appropriately put, because you cannot even begin to imagine waking up with the knowledge that they have to wake up with every single day of their lives. Unbelievably, in 2014, Minto appealed against the length of his sentence. How is public money allowed to be spent on this kind of ludicrous reality? He basically said, "You know what? It wasn't premeditated. I'd only intended to rape Sasha." I mean, who is this person? Who is Minto? What can we do with Minto? Well, I would suggest towing him to a very desolate island, keeping him in a box there and feeding him, I don't know, fish entrails for the rest of his life. That would be a very, very appropriate course of action. Sorry, you want to appeal the sentence? I do want to appeal the sentence. I want to appeal the sentence because I didn't actually intend to kill her, so it's not premeditated. What did you intend to do? I intended to just rape her. John, can you just get the boat? We're towing him to that desolate island. Prepare the fish entrails. Honestly, I kid you not, I cannot bear these kind of mindsets because the narcissism within these mindsets is just blindsidingly huge. The appeal was thankfully rejected, I imagine almost instantaneously. The judge, Lady Justice McCurr, said this, "The 35 years imposed in respect of this heinous act, given all the aggravating factors of sexual depravity and the desecration of this young woman's body by the attempt to cremate it so meaninglessly, was not a day too long." Personally, I would have thought maybe just double a sentence. I imagine that the judge probably would have liked to have done that too. Just, shall we give him another 35 years? Shall we give him 135 years? Tony, I like where you're going with this. Chris, what's that? The fish entrails. You keep throwing that fish entrails, desolate island thing forward, and I keep telling you, as much as I'm 100% behind it, apparently it goes against a prisoner's human rights to tow them to an island and feed them fish entrails in a box. But I like where you're going with this. Keep thinking, because one day we're going to stumble on something that we can actually do. Now, poor Sasha's family have obviously had to go through the loss. They've had to go through this horrific trial. They've had to see this absolute monster appeal for a reduction in his sentence. And they have really wanted to create legacy for Sasha and also for other families who have to endure losses because they have been through the court process and they feel that there are problems with it. So on the 10th anniversary of Sasha's death, Sasha's mother, Jane, and her family appealed for the limit to appeal lenient sentences to be removed. So victims and families have basically got 28 days to appeal a sentence. So if they don't think it's long enough, they can obviously go ahead and do that. But she said at the time of the trial, she was basically informed that 35 years was a good sentence and was also advised to keep the heads down. So basically just accept that this is good, that we've done well, and don't make a fuss. But she now feels, on reflection, he should have been given a whole life order, because the thought of this horrifically brutal man being free after 35 years means that, as far as they're concerned, he's going to have a life ahead of him that was taken from their daughter. She also said that at the time, when they have to think about all this, essentially, they were just broken. They'd had to sit through a daughter's trial. They had no fight left. They couldn't imagine going to another court appearance. So for her, the initial 28 days after that sentence was passed, they say it's not long enough. We needed time to process this. We needed time to figure out, do we have the strength to appeal this sentence? Would we be able to cope with it psychologically as a family? And the truth is, that 28 days just couldn't be a time frame that you could explore all of that. So they really want families to have longer. Also, it's just worth noting that Jane is actually dying. She's got stage 4 small cell lung cancer. So she's coping with this even while still trying to change the law. And she wants that law to change while she's alive. They did create a petition for Sasha's law, that again is about trying to remove the time limit that the killer's sentence is reviewed under. But unfortunately, the government responded to the petition on August 14th, 2023, and they said there are no plans to remove the time limit. They say that they're working to raise the awareness of it with victims and the families, but is that enough? I mean, again, why shouldn't a family have longer to appeal those sentences? I agree. I don't think he should have just got 35 years. I don't think that man should ever walk the streets. In fact, when you think about serial killer Joanna Donaghy and the way that she murdered her victims, you kind of feel that there are similarities. This guy, I do not believe, will ever be safe to walk our streets. And Sasha's family are desperately trying to prevent him having the opportunity to do more harm. And I think the government should be listening to that. It must be deeply frustrating for the family, because it does feel as if they are siding more with the perpetrators than with the victims in this situation. And I also think, what incredible strength for Sasha's family to actually have worked so hard to try to ensure that all the victims' families understand that there are these time limits, but also that trying to extend that so that people will have an opportunity to appeal at a time when their mindset and psychology can manage it. Because you've gone through such an emotionally intense and diabolically difficult period. Of course you need time to process. 28 days is nothing immediately after that sentence is passed. But sadly, government obviously aren't on the side of the family in that respect. Katie, who's Sasha's sister, she commented that she wants to remind people what her sister missed out on, to bring to light the injustice. So she's missed out on 4 nieces and nephews. She's missed out on all these big family events. She could even have been a mum herself these days. And her sister says she's still missed every day and she isn't forgotten. And of course, she'll never be forgotten, because Sasha was incalculably important to this world and certainly unconditionally loved by every member of her family then and now and forever. I do feel real sadness to recognise that the government aren't actually acknowledging that victims' families need more time. And the reason I've covered this case today is because of that. I want people to help amplify that message, because it's something that so many people will be unaware of. And I don't know how you guys feel, but personally, I don't think 35 years for the brutality of the murder that we've talked about today is enough. I don't feel safe thinking that this man will still be young enough to do serious damage to this world when he's let out, if he's given parole. And the feeling that the family must have to carry day in, day out, knowing that he's going to get that potential second chance when Sasha was denied a future that she was thriving in, that must keep them awake at night. I wanted to tell this story because when I found out about Sasha's law and what they were trying to do, it provoked me to look into this case. And finding out the experience that she went through in those final moments and realizing the danger that this man poses to our society and the calculation of the crime itself, I fully agree and fully support the fact that all of these families who find themselves in scenarios where perpetrators are given sentences should have time to gestate and explore the way that they feel about that and then appeal if they feel that the sentence is too short. That's been denied to Sasha's family, but maybe with that kind of lobbying and the continuation of this, where they refuse to stay silent on these cases, they refuse to be quiet about the fact that it feels unjust that a 35-year sentence was given for this kind of crime, maybe, just maybe in time, the law will change.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.